Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for October 26, 2017. Today in the news, we're going to be talking about American Vandal Season 2, Justice League box office tracking, more Veronica Mars, Stranger Things after show that isn't an after show, a Bad Boys TV spinoff, and returning members for the family for Fast and the Furious 9. And in the mailbag, we're going to answer the question, is dynamic pricing the future of movie going? And in the water cooler, Ben's going to be talking about Your Name. This is Peter Sorota, and on today's podcast, joining me are Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's up?
And Hoai Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
How's it going, guys? Let's start this off with a brief water cooler, because I know Ben saw a movie recently that he wanted to discuss. Ben, what did you see?
Yeah, just briefly, I wanted to talk to HT real quick about Your Name, which is an anime film that she recommended on the podcast. It's probably been maybe a month ago at this point, but I finally got a chance to check it out. I was flying back to LA from Kansas City and saw that it was on available on the flight. So I watched this movie, even though I know nothing about anime films and am certainly, you know, like wildly ignorant when it comes to that entire medium of storytelling. But HT's description of Your Name had me so intrigued that I figured I'd dive in and check this thing out. I have to admit, for the first, I don't know, half of the movie, I was a little unsure about it still. I was like, I don't know about this. But by the time a big moment happens, and I'm not really going to give much of the plot away because I also want as many people as possible to see this film. By the time a big moment happens, maybe halfway through, maybe a little bit more than that, I was like completely emotionally hooked and invested in a way that I did not foresee with these characters. And I ended up crying at the end of the movie. I was like so moved that this film, it really took me by surprise. So I just wanted to say a quick thanks to HT for recommending Your Name and sort of try to pass that, you know, pay it forward and pass that along to anybody who is listening, who is interested in and maybe even not interested in checking it out. I would highly recommend it.
I'm so happy you liked it. Yeah, I don't think that Your Name, I think Your Name is a very easy movie to go into if you are not familiar with anime. So it doesn't really abide by a lot of the sort of landmarks of anime that kind of put people off of it. So I'm so happy you liked it, Ben.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And I still have, I'm a bad host. I still have not seen this. But anybody that wants a reason to go see this, if you need a reason to go see this, other than hearing it is great, or one of the best movies of the year from two of the podcast hosts here, you know, J.J. Abrams is developing a remake of this. So if you want to be ahead of the curve, and you want to be like, oh, I liked it back when it was this Japanese anime, you know, go check it out now.
Yeah, and HT actually wrote a really good article about sort of grappling with that potential remake and like what that was gonna be. And I read that piece, and then I watched this movie knowing that this remake was coming. And I think I sort of agree with one of the latter points that HT made in that piece, where I was like, with this remake being from the writer of Arrival, I was like, man, I can really see this an Americanized version of this story turning out really, really well, because the way that the emotions sort of take over the story late in the film, it reminded me a lot of Arrival. So I think there's definitely a lot of potential there.
Okay, let's jump into the news. First up in the news, American Vandal has gotten renewed for season 2. I know HT and Ben, both of you are huge fans of this. I have yet to see it. What is this show? Because a lot of people probably, it might not be on a lot of people's radar.
Oh my God, Peter, you have to watch this show. It's pretty amazing. HT, do you want to like run down what it is?
Oh, sure. So American Vandal is a mockumentary series that is basically a send-up of all the true crime documentaries that have become a huge phenomenon lately. Serial, The Jinx, I think.
Yep, and Making a Murderer.
Making a Murderer, tons of others. And it basically takes this very self-serious premise and puts it onto the most inane subject, which is this case of 27 penises drawn or spray painted onto cars at a high school. And so it's presented from the point of view of these high school filmmakers who try to do a sort of true crime documentary of this one guy who's kind of this burnout at this high school, and everyone thinks he did it, but they try to approach it from a very serious manner, and they go through every episode with very scrutinizing detail on all of the penis drawings and all of the circumstances surrounding it, and turns out to be quite a compelling piece of work, and you end up being engrossed in it, just wondering who drew the dicks.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. So today they announced that season 2 is definitely happening. They released a quick announcement video, and this second season is going to be on Netflix sometime in 2018. The same co-creators and showrunner are going to be coming back for the second season. They haven't really said much about what exactly the story is going to be this time around. It seems like it's going to be a different tale, not necessarily picking up the threads of where they left off last time. But it does seem like, thanks to the voiceover that we hear in this announcement video, that Peter Maldonado, who is the sophomore documentarian within the world of the show, who's played by an actor named Tyler Alvarez, is going to be back, sort of leading the charge again, perhaps on a different case this time around. So I'm interested to see what they do here, because the first season was so singular in the way that it sort of sent up the tropes of the true crime documentary genre. And I don't know if they're going to be able to recapture that same sort of surprise that came with how well they recreated stylistically a lot of these storytelling elements. So now that like we know sort of what to expect from it, I wonder if they're going to pivot and sort of tackle a different type of documentary approach to it, or if they're really going to just double down on that and it won't be as funny. But the part of American Vandal that's so great is the premise is hilarious, and a lot of the show is very funny, but the character work is so good. You actually get legitimately engrossed in what's going on and like genuinely interested in solving the mystery that this presents, even though it is incredibly inane and really stupid. You sort of get sucked in. I was like, there's no way that they're going to be able to justify 8 half-hour episodes of this based on what the premise is, but they really do, and I can't wait to see what they do for season 2.
Yeah, there's some surprisingly authentic characterization going on with the depiction of high school society and like high school peer pressure and all that kind of thing, and the ending kind of hits you with an emotional gut punch. I won't spoil it, but it's surprisingly poignant.
Yeah, definitely.
Justice League is approaching us, and we now have the early box office tracking. HD, what is Justice League going to make at the box office?
So the industry estimates for the Justice League box office tracking shows that it will be have an opening of 110 to 120 million in US and Canadian theaters. So these estimates don't come from Warner Brothers, but from industry insiders. And they're partially based on the ticket sales for Justice League, which just went on sale last night, Wednesday night. So this will put it on sort of the lower end of the opening weekend spectrum for some of the DC films. It's higher than what Wonder Woman made at its opening, but of course Wonder Woman went on to become the highest grossing DC film at the end of the summer. So it's not an indicator of how successful this movie will be. It does pit it against Thor Ragnarok, which also comes out in November, so both of them will be kind of battling it out for which movie can rule the roost in the November season. So, yeah.
Now, 120 sounds short of what I would think a Justice League movie could make. Mm-hmm. I mean, could they be that off? I mean, they were off with Wonder Woman a huge bit, right? Like, the tracking for that was, what, half of what it was or something?
It was. Yeah, I wonder if it's because of all the news of the embattled production that's been going on throughout the making of Justice League that has this on the lower end. Batman v Superman made an opening weekend gross of $166 million about, and that's the highest amount. So it's possible with even more characters in this ensemble movie it could make around that amount as well. So who knows? I feel like it's sort of, it has been hindered by a lot of the news that has kind of swirled around it. But we haven't seen early reviews yet. That might have an impact on early projections. So we'll see.
Yeah, and this could be a case of them under-promising and over-delivering, you know, like not wanting to look foolish by saying, oh, yeah, we're going to make the same as Batman versus Superman, but then ultimately, of course, being happy when you know, if that does happen. So it could be just, you know, people trying to cover their asses, basically.
Yeah,
for sure. Next up in the news, Kristen Bell is saying that Veronica Mars is going to happen. More Veronica Mars is going to happen. She said this during a phone call during an event that The Verge was at. And basically, she says that she's had talks with series creator Rob Thomas, and they email every couple months about it. And, quote, personally, I think, and I think Rob probably agrees, is A, we'll never make the fans pay for it again, and B, the format works better as an episodic TV series. Now, that said, she also said, had a quote saying basically that, if I have to do it as Murder, She Wrote, at 80, we're going to do it. It's going to happen. So it sounds like it's going to happen, but this isn't, you know, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not in the works right now. As a Veronica Mars fan, I was kind of disappointed. I was very disappointed by the movie that came out. And I really think that show ended when it needed to end as much as I wanted more of it. HT, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was a huge Veronica Mars super fan too, and the movie disappointed me. I think I even donated to the campaign for it, like the Kickstarter, and I was a little disappointed that they kind of neutered the character of Logan, and it seemed sort of like a longer version of one of their more average mysteries. So I wouldn't mind Veronica Mars coming back to television, maybe having a web series or something. I miss the series. I miss having Kristen Bell as this sort of hard-boiled Nancy Drew type character. And she was really a very unique female character that we don't see a lot recently, although we see some of it in Riverdale. But yeah, I miss Veronica Mars. I'd always welcome it back.
Yeah, Netflix, get on it. Next up in the news, speaking of Netflix, they have announced a Stranger Things after show that is not really an after show. HT, what do we know?
Yeah, so Netflix is launching Beyond Stranger Things, which is a 7-episode after show program hosted by superfan Jim Rash, who you may know as the Dean in Community or as the Oscar-winning screenwriter of The Descendants. So he will be hosting this program, which will supposedly automatically play after you watch the final episode of season 2. And it comes with a cautionary warning to viewers to not watch it before you've finished season 2, because it has spoilers within the after show, which is a little bit odd because you always think of an after show as happening immediately after the episode in question, in which you can discuss what happened in the events there, talk to the directors, talk to the actors who were participated in that episode. But here it's just like a 7-episode long, like, special feature for, you know, the 9-hour movie that is Stranger Things 2.
Now, do you, either of you, watch after shows? I watch them for, I think, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul has an after show I watch, and I really like them. And Chris Hardwick seems to host all of them that are good, all the good ones. I tried watching that Star Trek after show, and it was, boy. I just can't imagine sitting down and watching 7 episodes of an after show. Because the whole point of the after show, by the time I've seen a whole season of, by the time I've binge watched a whole season of Stranger Things, and I'm having conversations about it, people are mentioning things that happened in the 1st and 2nd episode, which I don't even recall because I have bad memory. So I'm not sure an after show will work for me. That part of the after show is kind of analyzing those moments after, you know, as they happen. In kind of, you know, building towards where things are going. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Jim Rash is really great. Just as a writer and an actor, he's a fun presence. He actually hosted a talk show called The Writer's Room a couple years ago. I think it went for 2 seasons in 2013 and 2014, where he sat down with, people like Vince Gilligan and the creators of Breaking Bad, and then, you know, the guys who run Game of Thrones and American Horror Story and Parks and Rec and a bunch of shows like that.
Was this the one on Nerdist?
No, this is like a real, like a okay. full-on show. I think it was on like the Sundance Channel, which is a weird TV network that I think a lot of people have but don't really realize is a real channel. It's up there in the weird numbering areas that's not really easy to find. But anyway, that show was really enjoyable, and he did a good job as a host. He's a good sort of moderator. So I think the dynamic of the show itself will be fine, but I'm right there with you, Peter. I just don't understand the idea of watching a full season and then going back and watching, a discussion of what happened in the first episode. Like, you're way beyond that at that point. I'm not sure why they decided to structure it this way, but I don't know. Maybe it'll work. Maybe this will mark some sort of beginning of a whole bunch of after shows for Netflix series where they're going to do the same thing this way. I don't know if they're just trying to avoid having people interrupt the flow of binge watching one show. But it seems weird to me.
It would be interesting if at the end of each episode, you know how, like, I'm not sure if it happens on all platforms, but on Apple TV, when the credits come on, it like has a button to, like, you know, skip the credits and go right to the next episode. And, it'd be interesting if there was 2 buttons, you know, you could go to the after show or the next episode and it gives you a choice. I doubt Netflix wants that, because they don't want anybody deterred in their binging.
Right.
I remember HT said in the Slack, she said, what if this is just like bonus features for this television season? And it's not really an after show. It's bonus features disguised as an after show.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to get bonus features on Netflix. That's one thing I'm missing on Netflix, but I'm not sure if I need it in the form of an after show.
Yeah. 7 episodes seems, excessive if it is like a sort of bonus feature series or something. So I don't know, it's very strange. It's strange enough that it's an after show for a bingeable series, and we'll see. It's probably like Netflix's pilot for after show programming, if that does exist. And Stranger Things is one of their most buzzworthy shows, so it feels, I guess, right to attach it on to Stranger Things
for sure. Another TV show in development is another big screen movie idea coming to the small screen, but this is in the form of a spinoff. It's Bad Boys TV spinoff starring Gabrielle Union. Ben, what do we know about this?
Yeah, so Bad Boys 2 came out in 2003, so that was a long time ago, and they've been talking about making a Bad Boys 3 movie for years and years, like ever since then, basically, but it's been all down to getting the right people involved, Martin Lawrence, Will Smith, Jerry Bruckheimer, finding a writer and director. I think the guy who directed Smoke and Aces, what is his name? Joe Carnahan was involved at one point in making the movie, but then he ended up leaving it. It's called Bad Boys for Life. But that project is sort of like floating in the ether right now. Nobody really knows what the latest is with that. But it sounds like a Bad Boys TV spinoff is now in the works, and it's going to center on Gabrielle Union's character. She plays, what is her name? Sydney Sid Burnett, who is the sister of Martin Lawrence's Marcus Burnett.
And I mean, in Bad Boys, such a memorable character that you had to look up the name.
Yes. Well, the thing is, Gabrielle Union is really good. I find her to be an underrated actress, and I like the idea that she's going to be headlining a show. I just am not convinced that a Bad Boys spinoff where she is reprising her role as a DEA agent is the best thing. And especially because it's coming from Brandon Margolis and Brandon Sonier, who are the writers behind The Blacklist. And I'm just not crazy about that show.
What do you call this show? Bad Girl? Bad Girls?
It's still untitled, but yeah, who knows? And you know, the likelihood of Martin Lawrence or Will Smith sort of dropping by. Well, I guess it's a lot more likely that Martin Lawrence would drop by than Will Smith, but the likelihood that Will Smith drops by seems pretty slim. I mean, obviously he got his start in TV, but it seems like he's pretty busy these days. So I'm just not completely sold on this. But again, I love Gabrielle Union. I feel like she deserves a shot. I just wish it was for something that I was more personally excited about.
I agree with that. I think that there are teams of executives and at all these studios being like, what movies can we, you know, turn into our next television production? And they're, you know, they're searching their archives. And it's weird here because I can definitely see a Bad Boys television show, but I'm not sure if a spinoff makes any sense because you're using a character who I don't think is one of the most memorable parts of that franchise, and you're not going to be able to use Bad Boys as a title on this TV show, as far as I can tell. So it just seems like a lose-lose to me, aside from, you know, Gabrielle Union getting a TV show.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Also in the news, Fast and the Furious 9 has some returning family members. HD, what do we know?
So Fast and Furious 9 will see a family reunion, you might say. The director for Fast and Furious 9 has been sort of unofficially announced by star Vin Diesel, who started streaming a Facebook Live on the set of Fast and Furious 9. And he revealed that the director will be Justin Lin, who directed Fast and Furious 3 through 7. He's the one who sort of revitalized the franchise after it was getting a little sluggish after the second movie, and he kind of transformed it into this high-stakes heist franchise. And he left after Furious 7, after which James Wan directed
James Wan was Furious 7, I think, right?
James Wan was Furious 7. Sorry.
naming conventions of this series are so ridiculous.
He left after Furious 6, after which James Wan directed Furious 7, and F. Gary Gray directed Fate of the Furious. And another returning member, which Vin Diesel also announced during his very interesting Facebook Live, is Jordana Brewster, who played Mia Toretto in the series. She first appeared in the first movie and appeared in every film until Furious 7, after which she left with Paul Walker's character. Both of their characters were written off after Paul Walker passed away. So it's going to be a return to sort of the old, getting the old gang back together again. And Vin Diesel seems very excited. It's not official that Lin will be directing Fast and Furious 9, but Vin Diesel seems to imply that he'll be there for 9 and possibly 10, which will be the last movie in the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah, right. It should be mentioned that this video wasn't recorded on the set of Fast and Furious 9. That has not begun production. It's coming out in 2020. But I think if Lin is back, I don't see any reason for Jordan Brewster's character to be back, but whatever. If Lynn is back, he has done some of the best installments of the series. Ben, I know you're a big fan. What do you think of this?
Yeah, this is like a best case scenario for me. This is what I've been wanting for the, you know, from the start. As soon as he left the franchise, I've been wanting him to come back to sort of close it out. And I think, Peter, you expressed some doubt that Fast 10 will be the final entry. But I think that's going to be the final entry with this cast as we know it. You know, they very well could go on and do, you know, sequels to the spinoffs and all that kind of stuff. But I think 10 is sort of intended to be bookmark.
You don't think 10 years down the line, when Vin Diesel is not getting any, you know, Riddick movies being made, that he's not going to go back to Universal and be like, look, you know this franchise that we can make tons of money off of? Let's do a reunion. It'll be Fast and the Furious 11, the family reunites or something.
You know, we'll see a new Fast and Furious franchise headed by the little baby from Fate of the Furious.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if that, and that's the thing, is I feel like Vin Diesel would absolutely come back for something like that. But I'd like to think that as a producer and sort of an architect of the story here, he knows when to call it a day and you know, not to outlive his welcome. And then again, as I'm saying, as these words are coming out of my mouth, I realize I'm talking about Vin Diesel here. So God, who knows what could happen. But in any case, I am very excited if indeed Justin Lin does come back, because I do think he's the best director of the franchise, you know, has the most personally at stake and the most sort of tied to this franchise as a filmmaker. So I'm very excited at the potential of him coming back.
And
my hope is that with Justin Lin coming back, he'll also bring back his best character, Han.
Oh yeah.
No, I was just going to say that. I was going to say, he originated Tokyo Drift. Maybe we'll get some justice for Han finally.
Justice.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That does it for the news in the mailbag. We don't have actually a letter from you guys today, but we do have a story on the site that is about dynamic movie pricing. I wrote this article, Regal Cinemas is bringing dynamic movie pricing to theaters, why this is a great idea. So I thought it would be a good topic of discussion between us, just to give you an idea of what they're saying. Regal Cinemas, it's one of the big cinema chains out there, has announced that they're going to start testing dynamic movie pricing. And what Regal CEO Amy Miles says is that they're going to experiment with a pricing model that drives incremental revenue in peak periods and incremental attendance in non-peak periods. Now, it's very unclear what that means. She says changes to the historical pricing structure have often been discussed but rarely tested in our industry, and we're excited to learn even more about how pricing changes impact customer behavior, or how pricing changes impact customer behavior. I theorize that this means that maybe it'll be more like the matinee model, where, like, you know, weekday nights and weekdays, like, pricing depending on what the historical busyness of a theater is, might be cheaper to go see a movie during those times. It might be more expensive to go see a movie on Friday night or the weekend. Bloomberg suggests that this might be basically that they might have higher prices for movies that are in demand. So, you know, opening weekend of Star Wars Episode 9, you're going to have to pay, you know, $30 to go see it. But, you know, Blade Runner, no one's going to see Blade Runner. So you could see that for $5. So I was wondering what you guys think of this. Do you guys have any thoughts on, could dynamic movie pricing be the future of cinemas?
HG, go ahead.
I'm all for having cheaper movie prices, but it does concern me that this dynamic
pricing...
It's
a double-sided coin.
It is. It's a double-edged sword, so it could mean for higher movie prices for the more successful movies. But I do wonder how MoviePass could, or services like MoviePass could come to play with this, which basically sort of render all these ticket prices at a level playing field. So I'm not sure. I think that dynamic pricing does make some sense in a time when movie prices are getting more and more expensive. So I would welcome seeing some movies for cheaper, even if it means seeing some for more expensive prices.
Yeah, I feel like if they capped the price at, you know, I don't know, let's just say maybe like $3 more than the most expensive movie ticket right now at any given theater, then I would be more apt to be sort of open and excited about this. But I do feel like it's going to result in exactly what Peter said, where you're going to end up paying way more to see something like Star Wars on opening night. And like the idea of, you know, we're trying to get more people into theaters. And yeah, you can lower the prices during the week and sort of spread things out. And maybe you'll pull in people who were reluctant to pay full price if they know that they'll have a discount, you know, if they go on a Wednesday night, for example. But I think movie going is such a, and especially the way that Hollywood works right now, it's so event driven, right? And creating events, and then for theaters and stuff like that to create barriers to attending those events seems counterproductive almost. It's almost like they're, because think about a family, right? Like, you know, or just you know, a husband and wife or something. Like, it's not just $30. That turns into 60. So it's, you know, this is something that we've been talking about for a long time. But,
and by the way, that price, that $30 price, that was just me making up a number. That wasn't,
of course. But I don't think that's too far off, especially for, you know, opening night of a huge movie. And those are exactly the kinds of experiences that that people seek out when they go to, you know, like, we're almost at Halloween. So like horror movies, for example, think about seeing Get Out just in an empty theater on a Tuesday versus seeing it, you know, on opening weekend with like the excitement of a crowd in the room. I just don't like the idea of penalizing customers for wanting that experience. You know, the theatrical experience in itself is like, has degraded so much with texting and all that stuff. So many distractions out there. It's hard enough to get people to want to go to movies.
See, but I think I'm going to play the devil's advocate here. I think that this would help the movie going experience because, you know, when I go to an opening night of a movie, when I went to see Blade Runner on opening night in Burbank, it was like a catastrophe. There was just so many people there. It was so crowded, you know, people on their phones, you know, and this is at like in, you know, an IMAX theater, you know, this is like premium prices. So we're already paying what, like $20 a ticket or something. In LA for that kind of experience. I think it would be great. And honestly, most of the movies I see for the most part are at either two things, at press screenings or on non-peak times. I'll go see a movie during the week with my movie pass or, you know, on the weekend, like during the day when people aren't seeing movies. So for me, and by the way, I have a movie pass, which HT mentioned, but if I didn't have a movie pass, for me, I think it would be a cheaper experience to you know, encourage me to go to these movies during these non-peak times than to want to go with the, you know, the intense crowds. I do wonder, like, there has been a lot of talk of dynamic pricing in the past in relation to basing it on tiers of movies. So for example, you know, a small indie movie like The Big Sick would be a cheaper ticket price than Star Wars. What do you guys, this is not what it appears that Regal is doing, but what do you think of that?
That I feel like, yeah, that's a whole different thing. I wonder, man, that kind of sucks for the filmmakers behind The Big Sick, doesn't it? Like, I guess theoretically you're getting more people to go see your movie in optimal conditions, but you're making less money.
But are they making less money? If you sell something
I wonder how
lower
much
price.
I wonder how much that of that goes to the studios. Like, does that increase or decrease the amount that goes to the filmmakers, for example, this dynamic pricing, or does it stay the same?
Yeah, that we don't know. I don't know how this whole thing would work, or how I'm assuming if a cinema chain is testing with this, that they are not, you know, that they don't have the studios on board. So they're taking less from their cut, hoping to make money in concessions and stuff, I would assume. Because they already have all these workers working at the cinema all day and it's empty. So, you know, if they can get people in there to potentially buy soda and popcorn, you know, they'll make more money even if they're making less off the ticket price. That's what I would think. And that's definitely MoviePass's argument is right now MoviePass is $10 a month. You've heard us talk about it. You can see as many movies as you want, one movie a day. But they are basically have a MasterCard and the movie theater makes full price. The studio makes full price. MoviePass is losing money. Supposedly they're selling customer data and stuff like that. But all the analysts think that they're not making money off this. And, you know, these movie theater chains like AMC think that it's only a matter of time before MoviePass, you know, goes out of business. And then they're worried that moviegoers will, you know, have devalued the cinema experience because they've been paying $1 to see, you know, as many movies as they want a month. So I guess the question is with dynamic pricing, how can they get more people to see movies?
Yeah, man, it's a tough one. And it's without precedent too, right? Cause this, something like this, As the CEO of Regal said, you know, the industry is pretty static when it comes to experimentation with stuff like this. You know, theater chains don't really make moves like this very often, if ever. They pretty much just stick to what's worked in the past. So we don't really have examples of this kind of testing on this scale before. So it's tough to say, like, oh, yeah, this has worked in the past, because I don't even think they've really tried anything like this before.
And it should be said, Slash Film editor, managing editor Jacob Hall was so against the idea of movies having tiers of pricing, because he thinks if, you know, you did that, then the society at large would look down upon a film like The Big Sick. You know, it is a lesser than movie than Star Wars. But I think, honestly, the general public at large are already has that kind of tiers in their head. When you rent a movie on iTunes or, you know, buy a movie digitally, you're paying much less for a lower budget independent movie than you are paying for a top tier Disney film. So I think there's already kind of those tiers. It's just, and we're already paying them at home. It's just interesting because when you go to the movie theater, it's still kind of a physical experience in the fact that the movie theater has to dedicate that screen for that movie for that 2 hours. So online, it's just a download and it doesn't matter, you know, the download is a download. But in a theater, the theater is investing the 2 hours of that theater for that movie. And if it's not selling tickets, then, you know, they've wasted their location. So if there's any way that they can get more people in that box for those 2 hours and more people buying popcorn and drinking soda, I think it's in the benefit of everyone, including the filmmaker, especially if they're getting the same cut, which I don't know is the case or not. Any final thoughts on this, guys?
I'd love to see what filmmakers are saying about this. If they are looking from, you know, at this whole situation from a different perspective that we haven't really considered yet, I'll have to sort of scan around and see if we can find, you know, Kumail Nanjiani and people like that who you know, made The Big Sick, actually wondering about what this might mean for the way that things work in the future.
And Kumail, as many people know, sold his movie to Amazon. They had a huge offer from Netflix, apparently, and he wanted the movie to be shown in theaters. So, I mean, filmmakers want this film-going experience in theaters, but it's going to be interesting to see where the evolution and the where this movie theater experience is going, because I think it's going to have to change for us to get more people into those little boxes to see movies, you know, projected on light on a wall. I don't know. It'll be interesting. If any of you are near one of those Regal chains when they start doing this testing in early 2018, so in a few months, let us know, because I want to know how this is working. But that does it for today's episode. You can find more of my work at Slash Home. You can find more of Ben at Ben Pears. You can find more of HT at H Tran Bowie in the Millennial Falcon podcast. You can find this podcast published every day on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. You can go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review. That helps us out quite a bit. And if you have a question for the mailbox, send it to peter@slashfilm.com, and we will try to get to it when we can. Thank you for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.